Good morning. Let's go ahead and get started if we could. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I Colorado Revised Statutes. The date is April 2nd, 2008. The time is 8:35 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The title board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. Ms. Eubanks, I believe, will be sitting for the first five agenda items on all of this morning's agenda. And then this afternoon, Dan Carton will be the director's designee for the afternoon agenda. To my right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, representing Attorney General John Southers. To my far left is Maury Kneiser, Deputy Attorney General, who represents the title board. And to my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. There are sign-up sheets on the table by the entrance. For anybody who wishes to testify, please do sign up. The hearing is a formal recorded hearing, and it's also broadcast over the Internet. Just a word about procedures for each new measure that the board is considering for the first time. There's basically three steps. First, the board will have an opportunity to ask the proponents if the board members have any questions about the measure, since it's critical to make sure that the board understands each measure. Then second, the board will determine whether it has jurisdiction to set a title, which necessarily requires determining if the measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then we will work on titles using a staff-prepared draft, and copies of the staff-prepared drafts are on the table by the door. Anybody who is dissatisfied with a decision of the board on initial hearing may file a motion for rehearing within 7 days of the decision, and the motion for rehearing will then be heard at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the title board. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board, and of course the board is not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but only with the setting of fair and proper titles. With that, and I should mention also that the fourth agenda item, which is number 69, was withdrawn by the proponents yesterday. So. That's agenda item number 4, 2007-2008, number 69. Also, for the first three agenda items, I asked the Office of State Planning and Budgeting to prepare fiscal notes or fiscal estimates. Those are on the table by the door. In the case of number 3, the third item on the agenda, number 68, there was a question at the last board meeting about that measure, and the Office of State Planning and Budgeting issued a new fiscal estimate on that one. So with that, I'd like to turn to the first agenda item, 2007-2008, number 83, fees on energy emissions. And if we could hear from proponents first, whoever is representing the proponents, if somebody could come forward, and we'll see if we have any questions from the board. If you'll introduce yourself for the record, please, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is J. Thomas McKinnon with Clean Energy Progress.
Okay. Let me find out first, do the board members have any questions about the measure? Ms. Eubanks.
If you could, in terms of the provision in subsection 4 of your measure, which has a reference to sort of existing funding levels for the types of programs and activities that this measure focuses on, it makes a statement about existing programs shall not be repealed or reduced in consideration of this measure. I'm trying to get an idea of what you intend by that language, does that mean that the General Assembly can never change those programs or change any funding levels for those types of programs, or could you just give me a little bit more detail on the meaning of that provision?
Okay, well our intent was that existing programs that had to do with renewable energy and energy efficiency would not be eliminated with the new revenues from the Clean Energy Progress Fund. Would it be never? I guess because it's a statute, it could be changed later, but at least at the year one, the intent was it would be additional revenues to support these.
Would it be possible that the General Assembly could change funding levels based on other considerations such as, I mean, not necessarily because there's this new revenue source that would be provided by your measure, but because, let's say, there's a general economic downturn and a shortage of state revenues? I mean, in terms of sort of the normal budgetary decisions that the General Assembly makes on a year-to-year basis, I'm just curious or whether you're sort of trying to freeze the funding level those programs.
That was not the intent. So the sort of existing budget would be dealt with as it would normally be dealt with. Our intent was that because there would be new revenue coming in for renewable energy, energy efficiency, and so on, that other existing budget items would not be reduced, which would dilute the effect of what we're trying to do here.
And then my other question is more sort of me just getting a better idea of sort of the bottom line of this measure. I mean, understanding that the fee is imposed sort of on a very large scale. I mean, in terms of the consumption of natural gas or the generation of electricity. But could you just, to give me a better picture, bringing it down to sort of an individual user or the end user concept, I mean, when you take that fee and bring it down to, say, a utility bill for an average household, you know, residential household, can you bring it down to sort of that level just to give me an idea of what we're talking about?
We've worked those numbers using Department of Energy figures and Xcel Energy and different sources of an average household use in Colorado, and it works out to about $2.50 per month. And I think the breakdown was about two-thirds on electricity and one-third on gas.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Mr. McKinnon? If not, then let's turn to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Mr. McKinnon, I'm assuming the proponents think it does. So maybe it would be good to hear if there's have other people signed up to find out if there's anybody else who wishes to oppose the measure on the grounds of single subject. Okay, if you'll come forward and identify yourself and give us your comments, please. And then, Mr. McKinnon, we'll give you an opportunity and others to respond.
Thank you. My name is Mimi Larson, and I'm here today on behalf of a registered elector who is unable to be in attendance at the hearing. And I'm presenting their statement, which strongly urges the board to find that the initiative fails to meet the single subject requirement. On its face, Initiative 83 proclaims to only impose a fee on consumers for carbon emissions, the proceeds of which would be used to advance the new energy economy and reduce global warming pollution in Colorado. In fact, Initiative 83 proposes more than one subject and has at least two distinct and separate purposes which are not dependent upon or connected with each other. Initiative 83 will impose a fee on consumers for carbon emissions, usurp the authority granted to the Colorado Public Utilities Commission by the Colorado Constitution, usurp the authority granted to the Colorado Department of Health and Environment by the General Assembly, and impose a new regulatory mechanism on carbon emitters in the state. Initiative 83 has the effect of impermissibly repealing portions of the Colorado Constitution by statute without specifically identifying those provisions that will be effectively repealed. Article 25 of the Colorado Constitution confers upon the PUC the authority to regulate, to quote, regulate the facilities, service, and rates and charges, therefore, including facilities and service rates, and charges, therefore, within home rule cities and home rule towns, end quote. Further, under the Colorado Constitution, the General Assembly is the only entity that may alter the designation of the PUC as the agency charged with such regulation. Nowhere in Initiative 83 is the PUC granted with any authority to regulate the proposed carbon fee. The amount of the carbon fee is set forth in the proposed statute, and the Governor's Energy Office is granted the authority to administer the funds to reduce global warming. Under Initiative 83, the PUC is merely the entity that energy providers will remit the fees to for deposit with the state treasurer. As it proposes to do to the PUC, the initiative would usurp the authority granted to the Colorado Department of Health and Environment to promulgate emission control regulations pertaining to carbon oxides and reassign that authority to the Departments of Agriculture and Natural Resources. The initiative, at Section 6C, mandates that a carbon sequestration program be implemented after the consultation with the Departments of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Further, the implementation of a carbon sequestration program is a separate and distinct policy and regulatory proposal from the proposal to impose a fee on consumers to reduce global warming pollution and to fund the new energy economy. And this is a very important point in that to implement a new regulatory mechanism of carbon sequestration will involve a whole host of issues that would have to be considered, including who would be liable, how the carbon emitters would actually sequester the carbon and where it would be placed, in what reservoir. There are a whole host of issues that will be come forth from this proposal that cannot be adequately addressed in just this one proposal. As the Colorado Supreme Court has stated, any initiative that joins multiple subjects poses the danger of voter surprise and fraud occasioned by the inadvertent passage of a surreptitious provision coiled up in the folds of a complex initiative. And that was a quote from the ballot and submission clause in summary for the 2001-2002 initiative number 43. The initiative succeeds in joining multiple subjects. It will reassign the authority granted to the PUC and the Department of Health and Environment by the state's constitution and the General Assembly to other entities, and it results in promulgating a new regulatory compliance program. It is not clear from the stated intent of the initiative that the carbon fee will result in any of these actions. The initiative at this point is essentially attempting to propose that it takes one minor issue. It's almost like one little mouse in the room, but in fact, you have three elephants that are there that are overwhelming this one issue that they're attempting to propose. For these reasons, the board is respectfully requested to find that Initiative 83 violates the single subject requirement.
Questions? Okay. Questions for Ms. Larson. Could you list again the separate subjects that you're identifying in this measure?
Yes. The first one is it will impose a fee on consumers for carbon emissions. The second subject is it usurps the authority granted to the Colorado Public Utilities Commission by the Colorado Constitution and also by the General Assembly. It usurps the authority granted to the Colorado Department of Health and Environment by the General Assembly. And it will impose a new regulatory mechanism on carbon emitters in the state.
And could you just picking one of those, usurping the authority of the PUC, for example, could you point me to the language in the measure that relates to?
Yes, where the proponents have proposed that the fee of the rate of $3 per metric ton will be imposed upon energy consumers. Currently, the Colorado PUC is the entity that would regulate and determine what fees and charges would be passed on to energy consumers. So in Section 3A and 3B, where the initiative provides that this rate will be implemented and passed on to the energy consumers of Colorado, and 3C, where it provides that the entity providing the energy to the end user will be responsible for collecting those emissions or that fee and then remitting it back to the state. At some point, C under the Colorado Constitution would have the authority to determine whether or not this fee may in fact be passed on and assessed to energy users. The initiative, as it's stated currently, does not allow for that to happen. Does not allow for the PUC to.
Mr. Domenico.
I'm happy to say I'm not an expert in PUC's authorities and practices, but is it your position that the legislature, because the PUC has the constitutional authority to set utility rates, the legislature can't, or the people through statute, can't set any taxes or fees for electric use or utility use? I mean, doesn't the legislature already impose a tax on utility use, or am I imagining that?
Well, as provided within the Constitution, the PUC is the entity that has the right to regulate and determine what fees and charges will be assessed on energy users. And the statute fails to take into consideration the role of the PUC in that measure.
Is it, I understand that the PUC sets rates and some fees, but does it, I guess my question is, are there already taxes or fees imposed outside of that on electricity and other energy use?
I can't answer that directly. I haven't done an exhaustive review of what additional fees and charges are also assessed on energy users. However, the PUC is the entity, the regulating entity, that would determine and be able to assess those fees and charges on energy consumers.
Does it make a difference for that analysis, for your analysis of that, that this is couched as a fee rather than a tax?
Certainly there's a question as to whether or not this is a fee, and in fact really a tax.
Right, I understand that, but assuming it's a fee, is there a difference in terms of what you've been saying is the PUC has the authority to set rates and fees for energy use? And then my question is, if that were true, could still the legislature or the people through an initiative set a tax but not a fee? Or is it your position that unless you're going to amend the Constitution, only the PUC has the authority to do anything that affects your electricity and natural gas bill?
As the Constitution provides, it is only the PUC at this point that can regulate those fees and services that are passed on to energy consumers.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
about the natural resources? What part of the Constitution do you read as giving exclusive authority to the Department of Natural Resources to run a program like energy, like carbon sequestration or something that relates to natural resources?
Well, it's actually Colorado Revised Statute. It's CRS 257109, Section 2C. That statute provides that it is the authority of the Department of Health and Environment to promulgate emission control regulations. And
okay.
Emission control regulations include the regulation of carbon oxides, which would be carbon dioxide and would naturally fall under a carbon sequestration program.
So that's just a statutory conflict in your position?
Yeah, it is. By statute, Department of Environment is, Health and Environment is authorized to oversee that program.
And let me ask a question related to both of those issues. Assuming well, regardless of whether the measure is unconstitutional because of its effect on the constitutional powers of the PUC, and maybe I'll just focus on that one for now, why is that necessarily a separate subject? In other words, why is that a separate and distinct subject that's unrelated to the other portions of the measure?
Well, as the initiative is proposed, it is simply a measure to impose a fee on carbon emissions. So consumers, when reading this initiative, would assume that they're merely going to be assessed a fee for each time they emit a metric ton of carbon. However, beyond just imposing a fee on consumers for essentially using carbon, it attempts to go and reassign authority that has been granted to two entities, the PUC and the Department of Health and Environment. The PUC's authority, stemming from the Colorado Constitution, and the Department of Health and Environment by statute. So voters are not necessarily going to be able to go through, read this, and automatically know that by voting yes for this proposal, they will in fact be divesting the PUC of certain authority and also be divesting the Department of Health and Environment of authority granted to it by statute.
Well, I'm still having difficulty seeing how those are not just effects or a means by which the proponents are achieving their purposes. I mean, they want to impose a fee or a tax to fund certain purposes that, and I'm not trying to prejudge the right characterization of this, but to fund activities relating to global warming. And the nature of the tax or the fee seems to be related to the purposes for which the proponents are trying to achieve results. And that sort of feels like a single subject to me, even though there are, like I say, different effects on how they are able to carry out their purposes. I mean, the fact that this particular fee is perhaps something that's under the jurisdiction of the PUC constitutionally doesn't necessarily make it a separate subject.
Well, I would argue that it would, because by going ahead and attempting to implement an entire policy change, that beyond the stated purpose of attempting to reduce global emissions, that's fine. But the manner in which they're attempting to also affect that change results in significant policy changes and structural changes as to how entities within the Colorado government operate. Also, going back to the carbon sequestration program, that is a massive regulatory mechanism that would be imposed upon industry within Colorado, something that is greater than just an attempt to reduce global emissions. It is a regulatory program that would cause a great deal of time and effort to implement, and it would bring up issues of, you know, liability for entities in Colorado who would be liable for implementing the sequestration program. Just a whole host of issues that are not on its face visibly evident when reading this initiative.
Well, and maybe I'm going to be belaboring this a bit, but I can see how a carbon sequestration program is related to global warming. What I'm looking for is, as far as, you know, trying to understand the argument here, is how is that you know, a distinct purpose that's unrelated to the other portions of the measure?
At this point, as is proposed, the carbon sequestration or the divesting of authority that is granted to the PUC, those are issues that are not readily evident to the voters when they read this initiative. So the general goal of reducing global emissions, while that may be affected through proposing new programs and initiatives in this proposed text, it goes far beyond just attempting to reduce global emissions. It's divesting the PUC of authority. It is divesting the Department of Health and Environment of authority to monitor these programs and to implement these programs. And carbon sequestration in and of itself is going to be a massive new regulatory policy that, while one may attempt to argue that it's related to the reduction of global warming emissions, it in and of itself is a regulatory scheme that is far greater and would result in an entirely separate new regulatory scheme being put in place. So again, by just reading the initiative, it's not clear that these will be the results of the initiative as it's proposed.
Other questions, Mr. Domenico?
I can see how carbon sequestration could, in some circumstances, be a massive regulatory project. But all that this measure does that I can see is in whatever that is on page 6C, right? I mean, that. Other than that's the part that implements carbon sequestration.
That's right.
All it says is that minimum of 5% of the revenues from the measure shall be used to implement carbon sequestration, and then gets into some details saying that the paragraph shall be administered after consultation with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Natural Resources. And then carbon sequestration is defined as the removal of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This term includes but is not limited to the use of natural carbon sinks, such as in soils or forests, in the form of increasing plant biomass. If I read that as creating some massive new regulatory scheme, I think I might agree with you that the measure would have a single subject problem, either in that it's creating this new regulatory regime, or maybe that it's doing something surreptitiously or in a way that would surprise most voters. Because I'd be surprised reading that if that imposed a massive new or even authorized a massive new regulatory scheme. As I read it, the state can spend some money to figure out how to sequester carbon by planting trees and the like. I don't see in there the authority to create a new regulatory regime or the requirement to do that. I mean, if there's going to be another regulatory regime that springs out of this idea, it would seem to probably require it something beyond this.
Well, as the definition provides, carbon sequestration will include, but it's not limited to, natural carbon sinks, etc. Typically, within carbon sequestration plans, one may achieve carbon sequestration through the use of biomass, forestry, things of that nature. However, most generally, carbon sequestration plans will actually involve the implementation of carbon sequestration at the source of the emissions. So that will result in emitters within Colorado industries, whether it be Xcel or other carbon emitters, large energy producers, small energy producers, having to implement carbon sequestration in their facilities. And the language in Succeed does provide that revenues shall be used annually to implement carbon sequestration in Colorado. And I think, as you point out, right now the language as it's stated says it shall be used to implement this program. The details of this are not necessarily addressed within the statute, so it's left up to, at some point, a debate whether or not that may involve just agricultural or forestry measures to implement carbon sequestration, but it certainly does not limit it to just implementing, you know, planting trees. And in fact, most likely, in order to implement a carbon sequestration plan within Colorado, you're going to have to look beyond just natural resources to implement that measure. It will come down on carbon emitters to also comply, and the compliance will result in a very large regulatory scheme to have to be imposed.
All right, I have a question for proponents then, so yeah, we can move on.
Ms. Eubanks.
If I could go back to Mr. Domenico's question regarding your argument involving the PUC's authority to regulate rates and all. I just need to be clear in terms of what your argument is. Is it that you think that the measure violates Article 25 in terms of the authority granted in the Constitution to the PUC, or is it because that this is only a separate and distinct purpose of the measure because it's taking authority from the PUC, arguably, and giving it to the governor's office or whoever would be involved here with the fee?
Both, actually, in that because Article 25 does provide that the PUC is the entity that will regulate fees and charges to be charged to consumers, and is also this initiative then takes that authority and grants it to another entity to oversee and to implement.
So in terms of your constitutional argument, is it your position that neither the General Assembly or initiative proponents can in any way change, modify, usurp, reduce the authority of the PUC that's set forth in the Constitution?
Certainly, the legislature and by initiative, if one wanted to propose an initiative that plainly and distinctly states that this authority will be changed within the Constitution, that may be done. However, within this initiative, it's attempting to do that, to change the Colorado Constitution, to grant the authority to another entity, to impose a fee on consumers for carbon emissions, to change the authority granted to the Department of Health and Environment, and to implement a new regulatory scheme. Those are four distinct issues that they're attempting to couch under the tent of reducing global warming emissions. It's more than just reducing global warming when you're looking at changing the authority of two distinct entities within Colorado and imposing this regulatory scheme as well.
Thank you.
Maybe you answered this, but now I'm not clear. Does the measure detract from the authority of the PUC, other than setting a fee? Does the measure in any other way detract from the authority of the PUC?
Not that I have stated here, no.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Larson? Thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify that the measure violates single subject? I'd like to finish hearing from anybody who opposes the measure on those grounds. If not, then I'll return to Mr. McKinnon, I guess, or whoever wants to speak for the proponents and respond to the arguments concerning single subject. If you have anything prepared, or we'll just see if there's any questions for you?
Okay, yeah, I'll just say make a few comments. The first, regarding the authority of the PUC, the city of Boulder has been doing this for since 2006. Well, it passed election 2006 and it started in 2007. A very similar fee that we're proposing here. It's 0.0022 cents per or dollars per kilowatt hour. And when that went through, there was no constitutional issues.
It's implemented in the same way through the
exactly
the PUC
the
collects the or the providers collect the it provider and give collect. It to the PUC.
Xcel Energy collects it, and it ends up in the coffers of Boulder. I'm not sure if
so it's on people's electric bills.
It's on their electric bill, right. A separate okay. Line item on the electric bill. Just caught by surprise here, but it's our understanding that the state does collect sales tax on electricity, and that's not under the purview of the PUC, although we don't know that for sure, but that's our belief. Regarding subsection 6C on the sequestration, I think I'd agree with you, Mr. Domenico, that this isn't regulatory. It's setting aside some revenues that the state will use to have sequestration programs. Some of it will be in agricultural soil. Some of it will be in forestry. We put a maximum amount of 2 percentage points that can be used in the geologic sequestration. So that's what Ms. Larson was referring to is in terms of collecting at the site and putting the carbon dioxide underground.
Right. So it's your intent with that language not to authorize some executive branch entity to impose new regulations on emitters, but instead to fund programs to sequester the carbon that is produced in other ways, right?
That's correct, and that is the major component in Governor Ritter's Colorado Climate Action Plan,
right.
Is sequestration in agricultural soils.
So that's meant to fund planting trees or whatever the
incentives
best
for
technology
farmers
is
to use better tillage practices would be one of the biggest ones.
Not to fund inspectors to go around and check on Xcel's plants to make sure they're not
that is correct.
Spewing too much. All right,
Mr. McKinnon, would it be fair to characterize the central purpose of the measure to reduce global warming?
That's correct. Yes, that would be what we would say is the same
And in
subject.
Your view, then, everything in the measure relates to that purpose?
Yeah, we think every subsection in this points to that subject, yes.
Any other questions for Mr. McKinnon? If not, thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment concerning the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement? Yes, sir. If you'll identify yourself and who you represent, please.
Morning. My name is Sam Weaver, and I'm also with Clean Energy Progress. Tom covered most of my points in response to the objections that were raised about the single subject, but to recap, as you said, it's to maximize the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Colorado. And if there are any reassignments of authority, as the argument went, they are all secondary to that main purpose. In each case that was brought up by Ms. Larson, Tom addressed the PUC usurpation of authority with the Boulder Climate Tax and the sales tax. There's another one that I wanted to bring to your attention, which is Amendment 37, which was passed by the voters, imposed a requirement on the mix of the renewable energies in the overall energy mix of investor-owned utilities, and subsequent measures, which are all legislative and statutory in nature, such as last year's House Bill 1201, doubled that renewable energy standard. And so by the argument that's being made that this is a separate thing, those PUC authorities, as they were also somewhat impacted by those other bills, but the point wasn't to impact the PUC. The point, of course, was to advance the purpose of each of those bills. There's nothing in our measure, I believe, to address the question of it usurps the authority of the Department of Health and Environment to regulate emissions. We say nothing about that. In other words, if the Department of Health and Environment were told by the legislature to go out and regulate smokestack emissions through a CAP program, there's nothing in our measure which says that can't be done. So we don't feel that we do anything to impact the authority of any other government agency right now. And that's the carbon sequestration issue. You know, I think Tom covered that very well. But when we were drafting this, our vision was that it's money to fund implementation and research, such as integrated gasification combined cycle plants, which do direct carbon sequestration from that process of electricity generation into the ground.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Weaver? Thank you. Is there anybody else? Then let's turn to board discussion of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Is there any discussion? I guess it does seem to me that the central purpose is to reduce global warming, and that it's hard for me to see that there are separate and distinct purposes in the measure. It seems like the imposition of the fee and the specific purposes for which the fee is to be devoted all relate to that central purpose. And the different items that have been discussed as potentially separate subjects seems to me that they're means to that result, or their results themselves, but it's hard for me to see at this point that those are separate subjects. But it's kind of where I am at this point. Ms. Eubanks?
I think I'm in agreement with your comments. I would just like to add that in terms of the setting of the amount of the fee and whether that impacts the authority of the PUC, I view that more of a statutory change that is permitted under Article 25, but if by chance there's some constitutional issue, I don't believe that that's for us to determine. That's for the courts to determine, and I don't think that is a factor, but I see it fitting just like any other statute that may be enacted by the General Assembly or approved by voters through an initiated measure, that's within the framework of Article 25, and I just wanted to add that comment.
I think I tend to agree. I think I'm not sure I can agree that just because these are all related to reducing, to trying to reduce global warming, that that would be enough to make anything that could be related to that permissible. That seems like an excessively broad concept to constitute a single subject that would fit anything under it. But I do think that this measure, the things are tied together tightly enough under the idea of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and the fee is related to that. All of the programs are related to that. And I do think that there could have been a problem more under the surreptitious provision issue than kind of a straight up single subject problem if in fact this carbon sequestration was going to create a huge new regulatory body of some kind. But if all it is some money for the state to institute its own incentives or its own programs, then that to me seems to fit within the rest of the scheme. It doesn't seem to be the sort of thing that would really surprise anyone. And since that's what we've been assured is the meaning of that section, I'm comfortable going ahead. I think if there's a constitutional problem with the PUC or the health department, then those are constitutional problems that we can't really address. Just like if this is properly to be considered a tax rather than a fee, that's not really our issue. So I'm prepared to vote for it as a single subject.
Well, I guess I'll go ahead and move then that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles on the measure.
I second that.
That's been moved and seconded by Ms. Eubanks. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff-prepared drafts. Ms. Gomez has displayed the staff draft on the screen. And Mr. McKinnon, let me just ask you, on behalf of proponents, have you had an opportunity to review the staff draft, and do you have any concerns or objections to the staff draft?
We have reviewed it.
Okay, no concerns. Does anybody else wish to comment on the staff draft? See no one else who wishes to comment? Ms. Eubanks?
I'd like to ask the proponents a question about the format of the staff draft. And the context in which I'm asking this question is the staff draft currently follows sort of the standard format for ballot questions for most types of initiatives. But there is a constitutional requirement under Article 10, Section 20, that certain measures involving increases in taxes start with other ballot language. And knowing that your measure refers to the charge imposed as being a fee, I'm just curious, especially in light of what the courts have told us about various types of pecuniary charges, such as a fee is usually for imposed for the cost of a service provided, versus the provision of sort of general governmental purposes. And I'd just be interested in your take as to why the title shouldn't start out, shall state taxes be increased by a certain amount?
So the basic question is why we're a fee as opposed to a tax?
Well, I mean, obviously you can call your charge anything
okay,
you want in your measure. I'm not really going after that. But in terms of at least from the General Assembly's perspective, the courts have said that they won't necessarily be controlled by what a charge is called, and that they'll go to the nature of the charge imposed into terms of determining what type of charge it is. And although you call it a fee, I'm just curious in terms of any thoughts you may have as to whether or not we shouldn't start the ballot question off by saying, shall state taxes be increased by the imposition of a fee? I'm not advocating that we're changing what you're calling it, but in terms of how we start the ballot question, whether you have any thoughts about that.
Okay, I can't comment specifically on the Tabor issues and where this. We consider this a fee. The air that we all are surrounded with and breathe is a commons, and for people, this is a fee on a pollution fee. People who are putting global warming pollution into a common space. So that's why we justify the fee. I have difficulty in parsing Tabor to understand whether.
Well, you aren't the only one.
Okay, this should be.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, here's the danger for you, it seems to me. If we don't write the measure with a title that follows the Tabor language, and then your measure is challenged because someone considers it a tax rather than a fee, my understanding is that the whole thing will be thrown out as a violation of Tabor's requirement that any imposition of a new tax follow that language. And so I'm not sure what our role here is, frankly. Because if you want to insist that this is a fee and not a tax, which you certainly have a good argument. I'm not saying I know one way or the other whether this is a fee or a tax, but there's also a good argument to the contrary. And so there's a risk for you, it seems to me, in going forward this way, as opposed to saying, well, we'll take the conservative approach, the risk-averse approach, and include that language, even though we think it's properly considered a fee. And so that's just something, that's more of a warning or comment to you, just something to consider. And I'm not sure as the board, if we really, do we have to decide whether we believe this to be a tax or a fee in order to set a title? It sort of seems like maybe we do. But I don't know that we've ever been confronted with that. I don't think I have since I've been here.
Ms. Eubank?
If I could respond, actually, we have dealt with this issue. I don't know if you remember number 24, which was a fee that's imposed on construction that was to be used for funding higher education capital construction projects.
Mm-hmm.
And we did set a title for that, and even though the measure was in the context of a fee, the terminology, we set the title, shall state taxes be increased by such an amount by imposition of a fee?
We do that over the proponent's objection?
That I don't recall.
Okay, because I'd prefer not to have to us make the decision of whether we think this is a tax or a fee, just because it's kind of a hard call and it gets into the substance, which we tend to try to avoid usually, but we probably do have to do that, I guess, in order to set an accurate title if we really think it's a tax. So I don't know.
And my own view is that I think we do have a responsibility to make an independent determination, and I think we give deference to proponents. I think that's reasonable, especially in a close call where it's hard to hard to distinguish. But at least I do feel like the board has a responsibility to comply with a constitutional requirement in Tabor. Go ahead.
If it did have Tabor language in it, then how it would.
Basically, the Constitution requires that ballot measures, starting with the Tabor language, it shall state, in this instance, taxes be increased, and then you have to increase a fiscal dollar amount for either the first full fiscal year or total if it's phased in, and then it says annually. So, you know, shall state taxes be increased, blank amount annually, and then we sort of would continue in terms of describing the rest of the measure in terms of, you know, that increased annually by the imposition of a clean energy progress fee or however we want to word the title. But it just, it's that very beginning phrase, and it has to ultimately appear in bold language and all bold type. But it's just that beginning phrase, and then we're back to describing the measure just like we would regardless of whether it's viewed as a TABOR measure or not.
Well, we're using the Boulder Climate Smart somewhat as a template, and they did have TABOR language in theirs in 2006. So
did they call it a fee or a tax?
Well, they call it...
do you recall? I'm just curious.
I think when we were running the campaign, I'm not sure we said either, but it had... I know it was fully... I can't remember verbatim, but it was fully...
Well, I guess I'd propose that we add the TABOR language to the beginning of the staff draft. And I think, you know, if there's support for that on the board, as Ms. Eubanks indicates, we would just be inserting some words at the very beginning on line one that would say state taxes, and Ms. Gomez, if you want to just go ahead and type this and so this, we can see what it would look like, state taxes shall be increased. And I'm going to go ahead and use the figure in the OSPB estimate for now, just for the sake of looking at words. But it's $209.0 million, dollar sign 209.0. million in words. The word million, actually.
Oh, you want the word? Sorry.
I think so. I don't know. And then somebody will probably correct me on what we have normally said, but annually by, and then an would begin with the lowercase a. State taxes shall be increased $209 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes, et cetera. Ms. Eubanks.
And I know this is a difficulty because the way we do a title versus a ballot title and submission clause, but I don't know that the shall should be there, because when we put it into a question format for the ballot title and submission clause, then the shall goes at the beginning.
Good point.
So I think, although it seems a little awkward, I think for title purposes it would just be state taxes be increased $209 million annually.
Okay.
And then the shall gets put in when we put it in the form of a question.
I think you're right.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what we did, for example, go on number 68, but maybe we can...
Otherwise, I think you'd have two shells when you get to the...
And just for clarification, we actually set two titles, one which is the title that we're looking at right now, and the other is the title in the form of a question, which is the second title, which is below what's on the screen right now.
We write something that will make sense to people. I mean, I don't know. That's sort of the overriding. I know TABOR requires that we do something along those lines, but that doesn't make any sense.
I think, if I could.
Ms. Eubanks.
I thought I brought it, and maybe I didn't, but I thought on number 24 that we simplified it and didn't have sort of in the single subject statement a reference to Colorado Revised Statute. So it was more, state taxes be increased by imposition of a fee. And so that in terms of the statement of your single subject would be, and here on 24 it was, although it did say by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the imposition of charges on construction projects to provide additional funding for universities and colleges. But
I mean, does the I know we basically always just say that the submission clause is just the same exact language in the form of a question, and I've never even looked up if that's a statutory requirement. But even if it is, wouldn't, if we put shall back in there, wouldn't the way to rephrase that in the form of a question be to just move shall to the beginning? And wouldn't that comply with the requirement that it be the...
When we do,
I mean,
it.
There's a difference. You can state the submission clause, state something in the form of a question by doing a little more than just changing a period to a question mark, right?
Well, referring to the statute, and I don't have an answer right off, but the definitions in Article 40 of Title I, first defines title to be a brief statement that represents the true intent and meaning. And then there's a separate definition for the term submission clause, which is defined to mean the language which is attached to the title to form a question, which can be answered yes or no. And strictly speaking, I always thought that meant you just add like
a shall at the beginning and a question mark at the end.
Without changing the title itself. Yes, if you want to come to the microphone so we can get you. Yes, we do this often enough, you'd think we'd remember how to do this.
My comment's brief. It's just on number 78, which you'll hear next, I think. You have it phrased as state taxes shall be increased X annually. So it is just as this, but with the word shall in there. That was the staff.
And then on the staff draft on that one, in the question that down below, does it say shall state taxes shall be increased?
Shall state taxes be increased?
Oh, okay.
X annually. So it just as you have it, it just uses the word shall after taxes, and that was the staff draft. So that's how.
I think there's room for common sense even when dealing with Tabor. So I would suggest that we put in.
And that's what we
shall.
Did on 24. Yeah. I mean, state taxes shall be increased, and then shall state taxes be increased. So.
Yeah, I think we can.
I'll defer to precedent.
Okay. I mean.
So the proposal then would be state taxes shall be increased, and then down below, and let's just maybe be clear, there would be shall state taxes be increased by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes. Yes, sir. So I guess I'll go ahead and move that addition to the beginning of the staff draft.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other proposed changes to the staff drafts? Ms. Larson, if you...
As it's currently written, the phrase, sort of catchphrases that are included in the title setting, global warming, pollution, clean energy, those are rather broad terms. And for voters to understand exactly what the intent of the proposal is, I think that just leaving those terms in there as is without further explanation as to what the intent of the initiative does can be misleading, especially where it provides that the fee will be imposed on just natural gas consumption and electricity production. It's more than that. A voter may see that and think, well, if I merely don't consume so much, I'm not going to be necessarily subject to this fee. It's really on emissions, and you know, that can, depending upon how the voter and the and consumes the natural gas and the electricity, that fee could be quite higher than they may anticipate. So I think just the breadth of the term global warming, pollution, clean energy, it's not specific enough for the voter to really know precisely what is going on here.
And help me understand that a little better. I mean, how would you change it?
Well, for instance, where we say production of global warming pollution, what exactly is this initiative going to be taxing? carbon dioxide emissions. So more specific reference to what exactly is being taxed here, and maximize reduction of global warming. Well, reduce it how? Again, it's rather broad. I mean, one, we can all reduce global warming pollution by, you know, not driving, walking, bicycling to work. This initiative doesn't necessarily get to that. It doesn't have any impact on transportation. So it's a very broad statement, catchphrase that's used that does not adequately identify exactly what's going on here.
I mean, does it help that, well, in line, I don't know, line four of the version that's now on the screen, that it does say the fee is on natural gas consumption and electricity production? I mean, there's a little more specificity there than there is in lines two and three.
It doesn't necessarily specify, though, what is actually being taxed. It's not so much the consumption that's being taxed. It's the emission that is being taxed.
Well, I share some of your concerns about that first part of this, and one of my concerns, though, was sort of the opposite of that this doesn't tell people that it's consumers who are going to be paying the tax. Now, it's probably, you know, gets passed either way. If you really did directly tax emissions, it would be passed along, I assume. But, I mean, that's one question I've had about this, is this gives the impression that producers of global warming pollution are being, a fee is being imposed on them, when really it's being imposed on consumers of electricity and natural gas, or I guess just electricity, right? Whether, however it's produced. But I was trying to figure out, because I guess the way that the amount that they're charged is calculated is based on the pollution they produce rather than the pollution produced by the production of the electricity that they consume, and so it's a little bit complicated how the fee gets imposed. And so I'm not sure how to resolve that. It's related to one of your concerns, but it's in some ways the opposite of what you were saying about.
Well, certainly that is definitely identifying who exactly will be paying the tax. It's not necessarily clear for me, as it's stated right now, that anyone who signs up with Xcel or any other energy provider at the end of the day when they get their bill will actually have this tax added to their bill. And it also, separate, I don't know that's necessarily separate from your point, but just the manner in which it's phrased, you know, global warming pollution, again, what exactly will that be? It's not defined here as to what that
right.
Global warming pollution is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have three issues with sort of the beginning of this. One is the language clean energy progress fee. I think that kind of is, I don't know what that means other than it's the language used in here. I would just say a fee, personally. Then there's whether we need to better define global warming pollution, what that means. I'm not sure I actually think it's a problem as it is, but it's something that caught my attention. And then this issue of what the fee is actually how this fee is actually being imposed, I'm not sure is clearly conveyed by the title the way it's written. This isn't real. I'm sort of moving on to discussion, but you brought up some similar issues, so. But if you have something else, go ahead and we can
move on.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McKinnon? Yeah.
Mr. Shepard, regarding Ms. Larson's comment about how somehow there's going to be hidden costs in here, I don't know where that comes from, and so perhaps you could explain it. Again, if we use the Boulder plan as a template, it put in a cents per kilowatt hour that would be charged right in the title.
I'm sorry, before we move on. So did that say, so something like right after the fee language there, it said a fee of something per kilowatt hour? Is that what you mean?
I don't know where it appeared in there, but it had a per kilowatt hour fee.
Okay.
Now, in ours, it's a little more complicated because we're specifying it on a per ton of carbon dioxide. So what we'd like to do is incentivize cleaner power, wind power, solar power, and so on. But we would not be averse to putting a maximum fee, which would be, just be set at the rate of coal-fired power. That's the source of energy that I know Tabor requires that. I think that you have sort of the upper limit. And then on natural gas, and I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it would be so much per, I think it's about 2 cents per therm, so that number.
Would you object if we got rid of clean energy progress in line two? I sort of feel that kind of is, if anything, sort of just advertising and...
We would object. I mean, Clean Energy Progress Fund is what internally we call it.
Yeah, and I don't know that it rises to the level of a catchphrase that would make the title illegal, but it pushes it, and you get the pretty quickly into what the fee is doing without it. So I think we should get rid of that. And if you don't object, I why don't I move that so we can move on?
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
Clean Energy Progress.
Ms. Eubanks.
Oh, I've just been scribbling over here in terms of trying to come up with some language to incorporate some of the concerns and comments that have been made so far. One thing that I'm finding a little problematic is if we go the route of, say, imposition of a fee on whether it's carbon dioxide emissions or just emissions resulting from electricity production and natural gas consumption, you know, there's those two things. There's energy, electricity production and natural gas consumption, and
I know
whether we think that it's okay because it's on those two different activities that are generating the emissions, even though they're the nature is a little of those two activities are different. They both result in emissions, and whether we think that we're okay single subject wise.
Or putting it after the in connection therewith in the next clause.
The only thing I could think of was something along the lines of a fee imposed on the consumption of you could either say, you could say the consumption of energy produced by carbon dioxide emitting processes or something like that. And then you could get into it. I mean, can't come up. I sort of do think it's important to get the idea of that this is imposed really on consumers in there, but maybe it's not. I don't. It struck me though that this doesn't get across a pretty important point.
Ms. Eubanks.
Well, if we go the route. If I'm following your train of thought, if we talk about a fee on the consumption of energy that results in, I don't know, carbon dioxide emissions or emissions in general. I mean, whether we go sort of that way. I mean, because then at least, you know, even though the fee is actually imposed on the emissions based on how the quantity of the emissions, the fee isn't actually paid until you've consumed the energy that was, that either creates the emissions or was created. I mean,
right.
Because the natural gas, it's the consumption itself by the consumer through their furnace or whatever, whereas electricity, it's the production of the electricity. It isn't the consumption of the electricity that's right. causing the emission. It's the initial production. But both it's both on the consumption. I mean, it's right. the fees in collected
right.
at the on the consumer.
Right.
And so if you talk about it in terms of a fee on the consumption of energy which produces emissions or something like that, whether or not that would...
Please.
Just to make a comment again on the drafting, we intentionally limited this to not all forms of carbon dioxide emission because it became overly broad if we attempted to address things like concrete plants and gasoline. And so the focus here was to begin at distribution methods that are, you know, already in place, direct to the end user. And we were not trying to hide anything. I don't think the people who drafted it were either, because it, you know, it mentions the end user explicitly in here. There's a potential, and I'll just read this and you can listen. This would be a way to, I think, capture some of the points that you're making about the way we've implemented it. So, amendment to the CRS concerning a fee on carbon dioxide emissions resulting from consumption of fossil fuels in electricity production or other consumption of natural gas. So, again, it keeps it, it states what it is, as you say, it's on emissions. From the consumption of fossil fuels and electricity production or other consumption of natural gas. And again, I think to get to Mr. Domenico's point here, it does mention end user explicitly in the text to try and call forth that it's an end user. And greenhouse gases, global warming pollution, are called out explicitly in the text of the measures to which six they are. So the, you know, I don't know how much needs to be in a title, but the bill attempts to, in the language, define explicitly which those are.
Yeah, and I say it doesn't. I don't think you're trying to hide anything. I think it's just a little bit hard to, the way it's structured is just a little bit hard to capture in a couple words. One thing you said, I mean, I liked a lot of what you suggested we say, but what. I do think it's important. Where we were going probably was misleading, because I think it's important, as he said, it's only electricity and natural gas consumption. So why don't we just say a fee imposed on electricity and natural gas consumption?
Well, it's not... It's not the consumption of the
electricity. Well, it is, though.
It's,
I mean, it
it's
is
the production.
Well, no. I mean, that's the way it's written, but if you don't consume it, you don't pay the fee.
But
I mean, so the reason you're paying the fee is because you consumed natural gas or electricity, right? The way it's calculated is by calculating how much your use contributes to, in the production process, how much your use contributes to emissions. But what's really being taxed, the act that's being taxed, is consumption. Or the act that on which the fee is being imposed is the act of consuming natural gas or electricity.
Yeah. Ms. Larson, if you want to come to the podium.
Follow up on that. Again, going back to exactly what global greenhouse gas is being taxed here, there are six greenhouse gases that could, in fact, be a part of global warming pollution. And currently, that's not reflected, which greenhouse gas that is a subject of this initiative, is not reflected in the title. And then, again, just to something to consider is when it comes to the sequestration, again, is that something that we can specify more clearly defined within this title, exactly what is being proposed to be sequestered, and which is carbon, and if that can also be included, because, again, we're just kind of skirting around what exactly is being, what's the subject here, which is carbon emissions, what is proposed to be sequestered, again, carbon emissions. I still would say that just limiting it to the phrase global warming pollution, again, is just it's too broad. In fact, this measure does not address all global warming pollution. It addresses one gas, one emission.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it might be good to, if not list the global warming forms of pollution that this addresses, at least mention that it defines them or lists them. But before we get into that, I want to try to resolve, if we can, the bit about what the fee is imposed on. And I really do think it's imposed on the consumption of electricity and natural gas, and it's calculated by figuring out how much your consumption contributes to the emission of carbon dioxide. So I would say that it should say a fee imposed on the consumption of natural gas and electricity . And then I think you could just end it. And then you could get rid of kind of all the rest of that on 2 and 3 down to be used to maximize. And I'm not sure I'd put maximize, but for the reduction, I probably would put. And then some of the rest of how it's calculated would go in the after in connection therewith, and all the rest of what we've been talking about could go in there. I think that gets across the main point I've been concerned about.
And if I may, I'm sorry, before you move on, again, when it does come to the consumption issue, I don't believe that the title as it's now currently written really conveys to the voters that by the fact that they are consuming a product which will result in a carbon dioxide emission, that they are, in fact, going to be taxed. So in some way to get that across and clearly state that because of your consumption, will result in this emission, you will in fact be taxed.
Right, and I mean, I think my suggestion addresses that concern, which I think is a valid one. It addresses the proponent's point that they didn't, that this only applies to electricity and natural gas, not your gasoline you put in your car or certain other forms of energy. And it's fairly straightforward and short, and really is kind of, and I think it captures what's going on, the most important part of what's going on. What I see as the subject here is imposition of this fee in order to fund certain projects. And that would be captured in that language, I think.
Well, and I like most of what you're trying to achieve, Mr. Domenico. Actually, I like it all, except that I would prefer not to use the conjunction in the expression of the single subject if we can avoid it. The fact that the measure only addresses those two things, natural gas and electricity, I'd rather find a way in the expression of the single subject to avoid identifying those two things, you know. I'd rather have some phrase that embraces both of those, but I won't fall on my sword over that because I do like the idea of what you're trying to achieve. I do think we need to address somehow that this is ultimately going to be paid by the end user based on consumption. Mr. Weaver?
I agree with your point, and the thing that embraces both of those things is carbon dioxide emissions. So the only reason that we would suggest emission of carbon dioxide or emission of greenhouse gases, that's your call, resulting from the production of electricity and consumption of natural gas, is because it gets tied together, as you say, because it's all based on the emissions.
I mean, would it help to follow along the lines to say something like, you know, concerning a fee based on carbon dioxide emissions to be used to maximize something, and then in connection therewith imposing the fee on, and then trying to get more, you know, worked into that clause, imposing the fee on, you know, natural gas consumption and electricity production, et cetera.
The problem I have with that is the fee is not imposed on emitting anything. It's imposed on consuming natural gas and consuming electricity, and it's calculated by how much your consumption causes emission in its production. And couching it that way as a fee imposed on the emission of carbon dioxide, I mean, I don't think most people think they emit any carbon dioxide, and so they wouldn't think that this fee applies to them at all. And in fact, they don't emit very much. I guess if they burn natural gas, they emit a little bit. But that's my concern, is that we need to tell people what would cause this fee to be imposed. And what causes it to be imposed is using natural gas or electricity.
And just to be a little clearer, I mean, I intended to address that. I mean, what I was suggesting is that in this expression of the single subject, we say a fee based on carbon dioxide emissions, which I think is true. It's the amount of carbon dioxide emissions is how the fee is calculated. What I would want to do, though, is achieve those purposes you identified, Mr. Domenico, in the next clause. To be clear that, in fact, it's going to be paid by the end user based on their consumption, that it's going to be translated to a fee paid by the end user.
I see what you're saying. And that so it's saying based on does address part of my concern. I still think it doesn't. I think the other way is clearer, and it doesn't bother me that it involves a conjunction at all. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't vote against it if the board wanted to go your direction. But I do find mine a little more upfront.
And actually, I do think it's important to make sure that somehow we address both principles, that it is based on the amount of emissions, and it's going to end up. I mean, initially it is
right,
but it's going to end up being paid by a consumer.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. They both of those concepts need to be in there. The question for me is really right up front when we're saying shall taxes be increased by a certain amount. To me, it's more important to tell people what it will cause someone who is this is going to be these taxes will be imposed on. What will cause the taxes to be imposed, rather than how they'll be calculated. But I agree they're both important.
Ms. Eubanks?
I've been scribbling again. And I don't... it doesn't really solve the conjunction issue, and we could go ahead and specify it out or maybe use the term energy. But let me just throw out some language. If we talk about imposition of a fee on consumers of either certain types of energy or of electricity and natural gas, depending on how you want to deal with that issue, based upon the carbon dioxide emissions generated as a result of the consumption, right? Or you could just say about the energy that, you know, that generates carbon dioxide emissions and not tie it to, you know, but I'm sure that wasn't perfectly clear.
Well,
if you talk about that it's a fee on consumers of energy, it's based upon,
you know, do both of what we were saying.
Base, yeah, and I'm trying.
No, I like it. I mean, you could say a fee based on
the carbon dioxide emissions generated as a result of the consumption.
Well,
taking your theory,
or just imposed on. You just say a fee based on, and you could switch the clauses, I guess. A fee either imposed on the consumption of natural gas and electricity based on the amount of carbon dioxide produced or emitted in their production, or you could switch the clauses around and say based on those things imposed on the consumption of electricity. That gets both of those, what we've identified as important points in the subject. I don't think it causes any single subject problems, even if the conjunction's in there.
Can I ask, though, I mean, I might go along with the conjunction, but I don't want to lose sight of it. It seems to me that we still need to say in the expression of the subject what it is for. In other words, right now we're saying it's a fee for a purpose. Mm-hmm. And as long as we can get all those words in there and not lose sight of the fact that I think we need to say something about what the purpose is.
Right. And my suggestion was we leave something at the end about to be used for the reduction of global warming pollution. I mean, we may have to define that. But that part of it, I think you're right. The purpose should still be in there.
Ms. Eubanks?
I'm not convinced that we need to go about the purpose. And for one thing, I'm concerned about the use of global warming or pollution, whatever, in terms of catchphrases. But, I mean, if you look at some of the other titles we've set just recently, like severance tax, we just said the single subject was imposition of severance tax, and then you talked about what it was used for. And because I think there is probably many differing opinions as to whether or not, you know, there is global warming, what results in global warming, what would help global warming,
right,
the whole bit. And so to have this sort of very generalized purpose there, I mean, I think you deal with it in terms of specifying what the revenues are used for down later.
Especially when we've got the Tabor language in there, you may not.
But that's, can we work on the first part?
Yeah, and then see if we can delete the rest.
Yeah.
Well, can I make a comment? And maybe then we move on. But I appreciate, actually, Ms. Eubanks, you did point out, we should be consistent. And the fact that we didn't do that with severance taxes does trouble me, that we did not say a fee for a purpose. Because, I mean, we've struggled with that many times, that what's the central thing about a measure when it's wanting to achieve a result, but it needs money to do it, and so there's both some revenue being raised and then revenue being devoted to a purpose. You know, although what I'm about to say, I guess, is inconsistent with the severance tax proposals, to make this all about the fee, to me, kind of turns it upside down. And that does bother me at this moment to say that it's concerning a fee. I mean, I would almost rather say it's concerning global warming reduction and in connection therewith imposing a fee. We've already said shell taxes be increased, by an amendment concerning global warming reduction. And that's just a very crude concept, but it seems to me a little backwards to make this all about that the subject, the only thing we're going to say about it in the subject is that it's a fee. And that's why I was trying to get the fee and the purpose together and give them kind of equal billing in the single subject. So I don't know. Again, it strikes me to be better to say that what the ultimate purpose is, that's what the measure is about, and then go into the first clause and explain how the revenue is being raised. But Ms. Larson?
If I might add, really it's certainly the reduction of global warming pollution, but the way to get there to end that or to reduce global warming is through imposing the fee on the consumption of certain items, which in this case will be natural gas and electricity production. So if there was a way to craft it so it's clearly states that through the consumption of natural gas and electricity production, a fee will be imposed, which will reduce global warming pollution. But to be able to accurately reflect to the voters that the manner in which the larger goal of reducing global warming is going to be affected and achieved is by reducing or will be through imposing a fee on consumption of these two, natural gas and electricity production.
And I certainly wouldn't propose not saying that. I'm just proposing that it be said in the second clause instead of the first.
But well, I've already said I think that I don't think you can just say the purpose of this is global warming reduction. I think that's way too broad and not helpful, and so I would object to that.
Well, and I am concerned about the catchphrase issue. I don't know about that, but I'm just saying what is the measure about? It's not about raising revenue. It's about something else, and it just kind of bothers me to make it all about a fee. Mr. Gessler, if you'd like to identify yourself and who you represent, if you do.
Certainly, Mr. Hoff. My name is Scott Gessler. I'm with law firm Hackstaff Gessler. I'm representing myself in this matter and don't have a client but could not resist coming up to speak at the podium, I guess. If I could make a suggestion, the single subject could be the consumption of electricity and natural gas production. That would itself be the subject. So you could say an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the consumption of electricity and concerning the consumption of electricity and natural gas, and then go into the specifics of it. And I guess I would just point out, I think global warming in particular is a big catchphrase in this particular instance. It is certainly emotionally charged. It will affect the debate, and it does not add any understanding to exactly what this is about. Certainly one can call it global warming, and I would also argue that subject is so broad that it would include anything, the subsidy of bicycle manufacturers so people walk to work rather than drive, helps under this reasoning global warming. So it's excessively broad, and that would be a catchphrase. And I would certainly argue that stay outside of the, certainly outside of the purpose and outside of the ballot title and submission clause altogether.
What about... I'm not going to let you off quite that easy.
Now that I've stepped into the fray.
Well, I mean, just for the sake of brainstorming, but what about, concerning reduction of carbon dioxide emissions?
I think even that is probably overly broad in the sense that it's, the carbon dioxide emissions here, the way it is done is through a very specific and limited mechanism. And I would also say, carbon dioxide emissions certainly come from a variety of sources. I would, take issue with Mr. Domenico that human beings do produce a lot of carbon dioxide emissions through the course of breathing. And I say that a little facetiously, but it just shows how broad and ill-defined, the issue of carbon dioxide emissions is to begin with. in this particular initiative, it seems to be more on the consumption of electrical and natural gas production in order to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. I mean, certainly using that as a modifier, I think, would be appropriate, because then it properly limits the scope of that phrase.
And an alternative, and I don't know that it does any better to address what you just said, might be concerning a fee on the consumption of fuels that produce carbon dioxide emissions. But again, I
think that certainly gets a lot closer. Maybe I know this, and not that I necessarily agree with the general approach taken by the board in this, but I know oftentimes the board will say on certain, use the word certain to specify that it's, or to imply that it's not all but only some. And that may be a way to do it as well.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. McKinnon?
First, I'd just like to disagree with Mr. Gessler. I mean, the intent is to reduce global warming pollution. It's defined in the statute definition section, and I think in the colloquial vernacular, people understand what that is. I'd just like to make a comment. Perhaps this is obvious, but we need to decouple that the fee is being raised on carbon dioxide emissions, but the intent of the statute is to maximize the reduction of global warming pollution, and that includes, in addition to carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, and other of the six gases as defined by the United Nations.
And the way it does that, I was just looking a little more carefully at that. It's pretty indirect, right, how it affects anything other than carbon dioxide, right? I mean, there's no tax imposed on any other emission. There's no regulation of it. I only see global warming pollution mentioned a couple of times. One is 5% of the funds going to programs to reduce global warming pollution, and then allowing people who purchase some portion of their energy from non-global warming pollution-creating sources don't have to pay a tax on that source. Am I right that it's indirect for the most part?
Within subsection 6, we specify where 60% of the funds are, we direct 60% of the funds. The other 40% are open to the discretion of the governor's energy office. Most of those address carbon dioxide. So the largest one, paragraph A, is 20% is for energy efficiency. So that would use less energy, reduce the carbon dioxide. B is for a renewable energy, and so on. There are other many other things that we didn't want. I mean, we wanted to leave it in the discretion of the governor's energy office,
right,
technology changes and so on, but an example would be things that could be done in agriculture to reduce the amount of nitrous oxide emissions. Fairly easy to do, wouldn't cost that much in this program that could handle it. But importantly, it's outside of the domain of just carbon dioxide. It falls under the umbrella of the six.
Thank you. Good. So I don't know that we're making progress at all. Ms. Eubanks?
Well, just an observation, understanding that the term global warming pollution is a defined term in the measure, that hasn't always stopped the court from finding a term not to constitute a catchphrase. I mean, that doesn't insulate them, but if they're willing to take the risk.
I address that briefly.
Mr. Weaver?
I believe there's an alternative phrase that's used as a term of art as well, which is greenhouse gas emissions. You'll find that abbreviation in a lot of places, GHG, and it usually refers to the six as defined by the IPCC. So if you find global warming pollution to be potentially too broad or too much of a catchphrase, another term to consider is greenhouse gas emissions.
Is that term in your measure, though? At all?
No, we use global warming pollution and then define it as the six specific ones. In addition, if you wanted to here, you could say greenhouse gas emissions as recognized, global warming pollution as recognized by the IPCC, because we do refer to that specifically in the measure. and the IPCC, I'm sorry, is International Panel on Climate Change.
Or you could just say global warming gases, I mean, or certain, or
certain,
but
pollutants.
It doesn't get you away from the global warming. It does get you away from
right. The
pollution.
So, sorry, we mentioned it in the next section, I. The global warming potentials of the six warming gases are those defined in the FAR by the IPCC. So that's where we've referenced the IPCC.
Thank you.
Can we try to resolve the what's being imposed issue before we, and then deal with the global warming and with the point about whether we need the purpose in the subject? I mean, my inclination is to make the subject statement pretty specific, include the concept of where the fee is being imposed, which is consumption, what it's based on, which is production of carbon dioxide. And I also think if we're going to get that specific, we probably should have something in there about the purpose it's being used for. I would avoid using global warming at least in the subject statement. I think it's probably more dangerous as a catchphrase there than if later you say something else. But I guess if we can deal with the first point, we can deal with that next.
I'm open to seeing some language if you want to go ahead and make a suggestion.
All right, let's see if I can do this. I would suggest that after fee on line two, we say fee based on carbon dioxide emissions imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas. And then I would delete everything, the rest of what's now line three, everything up to be used, and then I would probably say to be used for or something to be used to reduce, and then we can have our discussion about what to say there. I would personally, I'd probably say something like to reduce certain forms of pollution. I really am nervous about global warming pollution, especially up there. Greenhouse gas emissions doesn't bother me nearly as much, except it's not defined, and then it would be hard. Somehow we'd have to explain what we're talking about. And I'm not sure how we would do that. So I would suggest then that would be the end of the subject and delete everything in connection therewith would be my starting point for this.
Okay, so that would then read concerning a fee based on carbon dioxide emissions imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas.
All right, well, I got to fix that.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Okay. Yeah.
One way to fix it would be to move the first clause based on carbon dioxide emissions to after natural gas. Might be a little bit better. The only other way I can think of would be require us to add yet another conjunction, which I don't. So Why don't we try that? Move based on carbon dioxide emissions to at right there after gas.
So again, and for those listening at home, concerning a fee imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas based on carbon dioxide emissions to be used to reduce certain forms of pollution.
That's better. I mean, that gets across the point that they're not imposing a fee on breathing, even though it produces carbon dioxide emissions, as Mr. Gessler pointed out helpfully. It doesn't use a potential catchphrase. And that really is the subject. I mean, they're imposing a fee. I assume part of the reason to impose the fee is to make it more expensive to emit, to use carbon dioxide emitting forms of energy, as well as to help raise some funds for this other thing. And I think that does a pretty good job of it, even though it's not elegant. A fee. If you're going to add a comma after emissions, I think you'd also need one after fee. And I think I prefer it without, just because these things have so many commas. Can avoid it.
I think I agree. I mean, I understand there is a pause there, but I'm also prefer not to have a comma, I think. Mr. McKinnon?
I'd just like to make one minor point about our intent. The intent of this fee is not per se to disincentivize the use of natural gas or electricity because it is so small. Consumers won't even notice it at the end of the month. So it's rather the second part of what you said to raise funds that then can go into state programs.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Eubanks?
Do we have any concern that just the word pollution is a catchphrase? I mean, it definitely has a negative connotation to it.
Yeah, you know, I had a little bit of question about that, but are all these things defined as pollutants under the Clean Air Act or anywhere else? All these gases
or whether you
that you list as global warming pollutants, are they all basically...
defined by the United Nations.
Is that all at all, well, is it at all controversial?
No, none whatsoever. I mean, it's simply the physics of the gases, and there's so-called infrared cross-sections, and there's absolutely no question that they are in that order.
Because pollutants in some contexts, like in Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, are terms of art. I mean, they're defined as pollutants and or forms of pollution. And I just don't want to get in trouble if someone comes back and says, well, only four of these are really defined as pollutants, and so you're misleading people. I don't know the science or really the how that fits in clear enough to, if you guys have no concern at all that pollution could be viewed as some sort of improper catchphrase, then it's fine with me, I think.
Because, I mean, you know, the options, which I don't know that I really like, are anything from, you know, heat-trapping gases to atmospheric gases.
Right.
And I don't know if that's any more helpful. It seems like pollution always has a negative connotation. I mean, pollution is bad. And so I just didn't know if, even if you get rid of the global warming, whether there's still that potential there.
Right.
Mr. McKinnon?
Can I address just the use of the concern of global warming as a catchphrase. We just did a search of the Thomas, the Library of Congress, and so Senate Bill 309 introduced last year is Global Warming Pollution Reduction Act, so federal government level.
Well, they always use catchphrases, Patriot Act and all sorts of stuff. I mean, and it's not necessarily that by saying something's a catchphrase either that it's undefined, as Ms. Eubank said, or that we necessarily think it's somehow inaccurate or misleading. It's just something that the courts have said, if it's the type of thing that is a sort of controversial, as Mr. Gessler said, something that a lot of people have major disputes about what it means, we're running a major risk by using it in a title. And so I think that's why we're concerned about that. That's why I'm concerned about it, at least.
Ms. Larson?
Just to follow up on that, I would agree that pollution definitely has a very negative connotation and is something that could most certainly be used to, as a slogan, to persuade voters for this measure. And I don't believe that including a catchphrase such as this, that it does have such a negative connotation, is helpful.
Well, but just because it, sort of the flip side of what I just said, just because it has a negative connotation, doesn't make it a catchphrase, right?
However, it can be easily, it's such a divisive question and subject that can be used and turned into a slogan and I think at times be used to inaccurately reflect what, in fact, is going on here.
Well, tell me how this could, I mean, I can see how the concern I have, catchphrase concern, how it could be used as a slogan is, I could see that the proponents would generally sell this as a way to, hey, we're going to reduce global warming pollution. And there is a concern that that's a catchphrase, a slogan type thing. I don't see really how you'd run much of a campaign going around saying, we're going to reduce certain forms of pollution. Doesn't carry the same kind of emotional pre-existing political connotation that global warming carries with it, which is the concern I have.
Well, I believe the flip side to that, if you're attempting to characterize who these polluters are, certainly where does the pollution come from? Who is emitting the pollution? Who's the polluter? It can be turned into a platform for going after certain polluters and being used in the negative connotations that come along with that. So someone who is just, you know, emitting pollution left and right into the atmosphere, that's certainly a connotation that you could result in with using pollution.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I don't see that requires a lot more explanation. And a catchphrase to me is us using a phrase that basically does a lot of the work for the proponents, if you know what I mean, and that kind of takes a position on something. And certain forms of pollution, unless there was a major dispute that some of these really shouldn't be considered pollutants at all, I might have a concern because it's then inaccurate. But just because it's got a negative connotation doesn't bother me unless it's kind of misleading in some way or adopts a political position that'll be in dispute, and I don't see this as doing that. Unless, as I say, I mean, if you come back on and present us something on rehearing that says, well, these really shouldn't be considered pollution, then I might change my mind, but I don't think it's a catchphrase as it's written.
Well, I one last thing I would say, it was mentioned earlier that most voters don't necessarily believe that they're carbon. I don't think most voters are going to believe that they're also polluters. Everyday life. So I don't know that, again, including the word pollution there, I think could tend to frame the debate to be something outside the control of your average voter.
Mr. McKinnon.
Polling results are appropriate here, but we did poll on this, and the overwhelming majority, in fact, does agree that humans are creating greenhouse gas, global warming.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I think this is pretty good, actually. And, you know, I take some of the criticisms of Ms. Larson. But in fact, the use of pollution is in the kind of purpose part of this, which the purposes this is being used for really do go beyond nailing people who use stuff that emits carbon dioxide and trying to come up with other ways to reduce these gases. So I think it's accurate. I don't think pollution by itself is a catchphrase. If someone showed me why it was inaccurate, then I would think we need to change it. But I think it's... I like that statement of the subject.
Well, and I think I can live with it. Although, as I expressed earlier, I might still prefer a completely different expression of the subject, you know. But that's not focused on imposing a fee. But at the same time, I think I can live with what we've got there. I think it's still, it addresses both the fee and who's paying it, and as well as kind of what's it for. I'm actually on the verge of even dropping the what's it for, just because it's awkward and we have difficulty expressing what it's for. But as Ms. Eubanks pointed out, we do have the severance tax example of that. It's just that it strikes me that it's really about something other than opposing a fee. But it's a long-winded way of repeating that I think I'm okay with Mr. Domenico's suggestion, at least for now. I guess, and now I'm assuming there's, well, let me ask Mr. Domenico what you... What, if anything, would you do with the next clause?
Yeah, I think we could probably get rid of some of the language later. And basically just jump into in connection therewith what you're doing with the fee in some way. Thing.
Well, if it'd be helpful, maybe I'll just go ahead and move what we have. Go ahead, and if you'll introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sue Radford, I'm with the proponents. I find the language here on the fee and how it's imposed to be a little awkward, and to suggest a possible alternative. A fee imposed on carbon dioxide emissions from consumption of natural gas and consumption of electricity generated from fossil fuels.
Say that one more time, please.
A fee imposed on carbon dioxide emissions from consumption of natural gas and consumption of electricity generated from fossil fuels.
No, I probably agree with you that that's a bit less awkward than the current phrasing, but I still get back to it's not quite as accurate, because it's important to me that we tell people the fee is being imposed on consumption.
I think that does that. We have.
Well, what it says is a fee imposed on emissions, which is really not what's being done.
Well, in fact, it is what's being done, and it's the emissions resulting from consumption of natural gas and the emissions resulting from consumption of electricity.
See, I don't see that. I mean, what's being imposed is when people consume these forms of energy, they have to pay a fee. And the way it's calculated is based on how much their consumption causes to be emitted. But what really, to me, it's important to tell people what they can do or not do to pay the fee, or who's paying the fee. And saying it this way, while I agree it's awkward and kind of ugly, is the only way that does that. Your way, again, it kind of gets it backwards as I see it, which is actually more the way the measure is phrased, but the way the measure works is more this way. I mean, yours says it's imposed on emissions, the fee's imposed on emissions, but it's really calculated based on emissions and imposed on consumption. And that's the problem I have with that, even though I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, the idea here is that the fact of the emissions is built into the consumption, and you know that's a fundamental fact that people need to internalize.
Right.
And I just find this awkward.
I don't necessarily disagree with that.
Moving forward, that wasn't quite so painful.
I mean, I'm willing to listen to suggestions. To me, we have to get across the point that it's your consumption that will cause you to be.
Well, as imperfect as it may be, I guess I'll go ahead and move that language. And is there
right,
a second?
And the proponents can ask for a rehearing, right, if they come up with something much better and we can fix it.
That's right. I do have the feeling that maybe sleeping on this might result in something better, but like I say, Mr. McKinnon.
If the word greenhouse gas as opposed to global warming, would that be constituted as less likely to be a catchphrase?
Personally, I don't think so, but it's less of a catchphrase, I think so, but then it's offset by the problem of I just don't know what it means to the reader, and it's not a term used in the measure, and I mean I'm just finding that a little troublesome also.
I guess I was saying if it was in the statute, if
I see.
Of global warming in the statute and the definitions were replaced with greenhouse gas. We used global warming because on a colloquial level that in fact is what people are more familiar with, but if it's not accurate enough.
I don't know.
I would say I would find it to be less of a problem. I'm not sure it's worth it to you to go back just and restart the process just to deal with that, though. But maybe it is. You know, if it said that, would we include it in the subject? I would probably say that's okay in the subject, I think.
And I might, I guess, if I'd want to revisit that question of is that a scientifically certain term? You know, that it still sounds a little loaded to me, but I would just want a little more information about it, I guess. And I'd agree with Mr. Domenico. I'm not sure that it's something to change the measure for as well. I mean, I certainly don't fault proponents for using language in their measure that says that refers to global warming. I think that's fine. Just as a board, we struggle though with how to characterize that fairly, you know, without tilting towards one side or the other. So I've moved the change. Is there a second?
Second.
That's been seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion's adopted. Mr. Domenico, do you want to take a stab at maybe what to do next?
Well, the more I think about it, I'm not sure I have a problem with leaving it basically as is. We could, I think, get rid of some of the specifics since we've now addressed them a little bit more up above. But if we're following this format, the second part really is supposed to, again, say everything that that's going on. And it's a little redundant, and you could probably cut back some of it, but I don't know. I mean, this probably provides some more helpful detail. Is it too much detail? I don't know. I'd be willing to listen.
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out what that first clause after the in connection there with adds. We've said that it's in the subject, it's imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas. And then we say in connection there with imposing the fee on natural gas consumption and electricity production. It almost seems either repetitive or confusing.
Right. I mean, I guess it provides a little bit more clarity of exactly how it's going to work. But you could get rid of it, I think, given that we've been clearer up above. I also, even earlier, thought you might be able to get rid of the requiring the entity providing the energy to the end user. I mean, that could either... would anyone actually care that the fee is routed through the PUC? I mean, that seems sort of just not very important to me. So I'd be willing to get rid of most of that first part. As I said, if we want to provide more and more detail, I think it's okay. But if everybody else wants to get rid of it, I'm happy to go along.
Ms. Eubanks?
While I agree there's some overlap in terms of the single subject statement versus some of these clauses that we're now looking at, I do think that perhaps the true nature of the basis of the fee hasn't been quite, I don't know, described in detail. And so whether or not perhaps you use that first phrase about imposing the fee on consumption, on the natural gas consumption or electricity production based upon the amount of carbon dioxide, I don't know, generated or emitted, or, you know, add something there that gives a little bit more specifics about, because it's really... the fact that using the natural gas or having the electricity to use has generated the carbon dioxide emissions, that's the concept. I agree completely with you on the second phrase. I don't think it's important to talk about who's collecting the fee, where it's transmitted to. I do think that it's important to maybe help clarify, since we only talk about in the single subject statement about the fee being imposed on the consumption, maybe you have the second phrase saying something like collecting the fee from consumers of these forms of energy, or, you know, something to make it clear that it's the consumers of the energy that pay the fee. That's just sort of my initial reaction, but I do think that there's something that perhaps needs to be added more specifically about the basis of the fee, because I don't know, just by saying that, you know, it's imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas based upon carbon dioxide emissions, I don't know that in a more specific way conveys the basis upon which the fee is calculated. I don't know.
Yeah, I think those are good ideas, and I really hate to do this, but I have a fundamental question now that I've looked at this a little more carefully in this context. I think I misunderstood this completely. The fee is really not just based on carbon dioxide emissions. In 3A and B, isn't the fee is calculated? I mean, I guess this. I probably don't understand the science well enough. Is the way this fee is going to be calculated, someone goes and measures how much carbon dioxide is coming out of a certain plant, and then they calculate it based on this? Or is, I guess, my fundamental question is how this carbon dioxide equivalent fits with carbon dioxide emissions and with the what you call global warming pollutants. And I'm not sure we've got it accurate there that it's just based on carbon dioxide emissions, because isn't it based on carbon dioxide equivalents? Emission of carbon dioxide equivalents? I'm just confused.
Okay, so there were three separate issues there. First, carbon dioxide equivalent is a way of using what's known as the global warming potential, and we have that in the definitions to put nitrous oxide, methane on an equivalent basis. Since the fee is on, where it's collected is on carbon dioxide alone.
Okay.
Carbon dioxide equivalent, carbon dioxide are the same. There's other reasons for consistency that we use the word carbon dioxide equivalent.
So the way it works is you've got science that shows that if you emit X amount of carbon dioxide, you're essentially also emitting X or Y amount of these other gases. And so that's why... That's how they relate to each other?
Not exactly. If I emit a pound of carbon dioxide, I'm going to lead to so much global warming.
Uh-huh.
Forcing function is what an atmospheric scientist would say.
Okay.
And it turns out that a pound of methane is 25 times more potent. A pound of nitrous oxide is 200 times more potent. So if you had your choice at an equivalent basis of reducing a pound of CO2 emissions or a pound of methane emissions, you'd much rather detect the methane. So that's the notion of carbon dioxide equivalent, but because we're talking about the fee being put on carbon dioxide, in fact, the carbon dioxide, they're really the same thing. It's a way of normalizing it all to other gases to carbon dioxide, but we're not talking about other gases here. With regard to your question about will someone go out and measure, no. For natural gas, there's no issue here, and so we specify in paragraph E that it's going to be 12.8 pounds of carbon dioxide per therm, because all natural gas is the same. Electricity, however, is very different. Xcel is the largest retailer of wind energy, which has zero carbon footprint, but they also have coal plants that have much larger. But the utilities know this very well. I mean, they know exactly how much fuel they're buying, and they know how much carbon.
So it's kind of the average of if they have X amount from coal and
correct.
X percent.
It's a great average mix. So all they need to do is on a, I don't remember, I think we put this on an annual, it's on an annual basis. They look at how much fuel they're buying of various types, what their carbon content, all this is known very well, and they know how many kilowatt hours they sold, take the ratio of those two numbers. That's what's reported to,
okay.
To the Governor's Energy Office annually.
I understand that part, I think. But 3B says the fee is computed at a rate of $3 per metric ton of carbon dioxide equivalent emitted to the atmosphere from this production and combustion. And then carbon dioxide equivalent means a measure to compare the emissions from the six global warming pollution gases. And maybe we're okay as it is because it makes sense. But the way I read that, if you do use methane, if you are emitting methane, say, which you said is what, 200 times? Is
25.
25. So it's 25 times. If you emit a ton of methane, then you're being taxed. You're being taxed on that, right? Even if you have a plant that emits a ton of methane, it's being taxed, even though it's not. I mean, maybe this is. Doesn't actually happen. But if it just emitted methane and no carbon dioxide, it would still be paying the tax, right?
Right, and it would be 25 times more. But
right.
What you said, maybe it doesn't happen. As a practical matter, it doesn't happen. So Xcel Energy or the different utilities will buy natural gas, which is mostly methane. It goes into their gas. gas turbines and they make electricity. If they're emitting methane, they're tearing up $100 bills on a rapid basis. So they would not be. They're converting a natural gas or methane into heat, and then in doing so, into carbon dioxide. So there would be a negligible amount of methane emitted from the combustion of natural gas.
I see. So it's all the emission. And the way you figure out... I mean, I still... So I guess the way it works is, if they're burning a bunch of methane,
or natural gas,
or some of the other gases, right? Those equivalents, those have a ratio of that goes into your calculation, and you figure, well, if you're using this much of a certain gas to produce energy, you're emitting this amount of carbon dioxide? I mean, let me just tell you what my concern is, and then you can tell me if I'm just off base, and I'll take your word for it. My concern on line 3 is saying that this fee is based on carbon dioxide emissions, because the way I actually read the measure, it's based on carbon dioxide equivalent. And if there's really no difference between what we say and what the measure says, then I'm fine leaving it. And we can talk about science some other time.
So the science would say a carbon dioxide and carbon dioxide equivalent. There's these ratios that are put, like 1 for carbon dioxide by definition, 25 for methane by the physics of it, 200 for nitrous oxide, and so on. Every gas has its own.
So you think it's accurate to say that the fee is based on carbon dioxide emissions?
That's correct, because it doesn't matter from our standpoint what fuel comes into the utility to generate the electricity. What we care about is what global warming or greenhouse gases.
Okay, so you measure how much fuel of these fuels are going in to
the utility measures.
The
state doesn't measure that.
Well, they get a measurement of it. We use passive voice. And then the way they calculate how much carbon is going into the atmosphere by using those gases. So it's sort of the reverse of what I was concerned about, right? The use of these equivalents is because you don't actually measure the carbon dioxide. You just figure if you're using this much of certain gases, you're emitting this much carbon, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Never mind.
Is this why we became attorneys instead of scientists?
Well, you know, my dad is actually an atmospheric scientist. Have something to talk about next time we get together. I am. And I'm from Boulder. I really am a great disappointment to the family. Well, so... hopefully that served some purpose besides my edification, in that it made it a little bit clearer how we would say what Ms. Eubanks was trying to get at about how exactly these things are calculated, which I do think is a good idea of using that first sentence to clarify
more specific
the calculation.
Okay, so if if we go along those lines, perhaps we use the language that's there in that first phrase, and then perhaps add to it something along the lines of based upon. So, Ceci, if you'd like go at the end of the phrase after production, electricity production, but before the sim, insert.
Before the semicolon.
Before the semicolon, please. Based upon the amount of carbon dioxide. And I don't know whether just to say emissions or to say emitted from such, I don't know, because you have production and you have consumption. I have this problem of lumping it all into one. Emitted. Just leave it like that.
if you guys please add to it if you'd like. I mean, we could, you know, say emitted from such consumption or production, but I sort of hate to go there.
Well, what if you move your that up a little bit? And I'm just sort of thinking out loud, so it may not work. Imposing a fee, or imposing the fee based upon the amount of carbon dioxide emitted by natural gas consumption and electricity production. You know what I'm saying?
Let's try it and see what...
So, yeah, I would cut that and move it to after fee. And then I'd change on to by. Or through, or something, some other preposition. Or you could, in the process of...
Resulting from, or...
Yeah, resulting from...
You said based upon the amount of carbon dioxide emissions resulting from.
Yeah.
Change the emitted to emissions resulting. From.
I like that for that clause.
And I would so move.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
And then on the next phrase that starts requiring the entity, I would strike, I think, the whole phrase and replace it with something like...
What do you need me to delete, Sharon?
That whole phrase that starts requiring the entity all the way through Public Utilities Commission. Strike all that language and then replace it with collecting the fee from consumers of this energy or these forms of energy, or just collecting the fee from energy consumers. Although it is only from natural gas and electricity
consumers.
What
about just consumers?
From consumers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any reason to prefer consumers or end users? I think I prefer consumers, but there may...
I don't know that end user would make a lot of sense to most
people
on the street.
Makes me think of computers. So, yeah.
I'm comfortable with consumers because I think that ultimately is the use of that term, is that that person is not going to be selling the energy for use by someone else.
I'm okay.
Okay. Then I would move that change.
I'll second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of the next phrase that's dealing with specifying that the fee is in addition to existing programs, which are not to be reduced, existing programs is very broad. And whether we stick in a certain, because it's only certain types of programs, those related to the types of programs that are specified in the measure, and just to say existing programs, or saying existing programs, and then you get into, you know, global warming, and again, it's very difficult to group those because there's a very diverse purpose to some of those types of programs.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of other than certain existing is existing related programs, but I don't know if there's any danger that someone could say, oh, some of these aren't related. Maybe safer to just say certain existing
and
programs.
I would insert certain before existing.
I would suggest getting rid of the which clause after that. I think it's redundant if it's in addition to the others.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, all the way up to the, from that comma to the semicolon. I also think it's, I'd actually get rid of the comma and leave the semicolon. I think it's redundant. I think it's potentially misleading in that, as some of the questioning, I think, was pointing out at the very beginning, it may not really be possible to bind the legislature forever, not to reduce it, the other programs in a statute rather than the Constitution. But I'd rather not take a position on it if we don't have to.
So I would move those changes.
Second them.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of sort of the laundry list of various projects or purposes for which the fee revenues are used, I want to go sort of the way we've been dealing with some of the severance tax measures in terms of I think it's very difficult to have a laundry list the way it's written right now where it has sort of projects. It almost makes it, you have to get through the whole list before you sort of understand what all these terms relate to. And so perhaps we could say specifying minimum percentages of the revenues that are to be spent on the following purposes, and then colon, and then do some numbering to break them apart and keep them separate, because I just think that might be make it a little bit more readable to folks.
Okay.
So if you'd strike specific and substitute the following purposes, colon, then you do a paren 1, close paren, energy efficiency, comma, and then after that, then paren 2, close paren, 3 before carbon sequestration. I'm not a scientist. Can't pronounce the word. 4. After and, go 8. Then I think we'd also strike projects there at the end.
Strike projects?
Yes. I just think maybe that makes it a little easier for folks to read.
I'll move that.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries 3-0.
I think that's a separate phrase. Now, I do have an issue with that phrase in terms of I don't know that it's just establishing a task force. It's funding the task force, which is established, and perhaps it's similar to issues we've dealt with on some of the severance tax measures, that we want to say funding
a Clean Energy Progress Task Force, which is established to develop strategies for a clean energy portfolio. Because those are, in terms of the way the measure, I mean, it goes through and it specifies certain percentages for certain purposes, which I think generally are the laundry list purposes, and then it gets into separate dollar amounts for the task force, for the senior advisor on climate change, and it just, I don't know, it seemed a little different rather than including that in the laundry list, but I guess we could do that if you think that's more appropriate.
Well, you'd have to rewrite the intro to the laundry list. Because the current laundry list really are minimum percentages, and these are dollar amounts, specific dollar amounts.
Okay.
So you could, I mean, you could rewrite that to say something like specifying
that the revenues are to be spent.
Yeah. I think I prefer to leave it kind of as it is with the percentages part and then a separate funding these projects. Just because there's a fundamental difference. I mean, the later parts get a set amount of money, basically, and the others sort of have to rely on the whims of how much the tax brings in, and maybe more importantly, it's probably good to hint to people that those eight, it's kind of that if they're concerned about how much is going into renewable energy versus public education, that they should look, that it's specified, the ratios are specified, and I think putting it this way is helpful for that purpose. So I would probably leave it.
I mean, Ms. Eubanks, I'm wondering if it would be better. Well, I'm going back to something you said earlier. If we should say funding the establishment and operation of a Clean Energy Progress Task Force to develop strategies, et cetera.
And I'm fine with that. Or you could say funding a Clean Energy Progress Task Force, which is established to develop strategies for a clean energy portfolio.
Or
however you want to
establishing and funding.
And I'm fine with that, too.
How about establishing and funding?
I think I'd be happy any of those three are okay with me.
Establishing and funding?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I'll move that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And I don't know that, it's my recollection, and although my memory's not very good, I believe that perhaps the governor's already established by perhaps executive order or something that there's a senior advisor on climate change. So I don't know that this measure is establishing it, it's only just funding it. So I think we would just leave that phrase the way it is if my memory's correct. Is that?
I think that's right.
And then I would, I just don't think the last phrase, that's a major component of the measure, and I would strike it completely, and relating to that then in front of the phrase funding a senior advisor, I would insert an and, because that would be the end, the last phrase of the
Yeah, unless there's some objection, I would think that's fine. Don't all government agencies have to deliver an annual report just by their nature?
Yep.
I mean, if you guys want it in there, if it's important to the proponents, that's fine with me, but that's what governments do.
It'll help us avoid a reference to global warming pollution.
So does that mean I delete from here?
No, you want to put a period after senior advisor to the governor on climate change. Put a period there and then strike the remainder.
I'll move that change.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes?
Let me look at it for just a second.
And maybe for the record, I'm going to have to do this sooner or later while we look at it. I'll go ahead and read it into the record the way we've amended it so far. The title would read, State taxes shall be increased $209 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a fee imposed on the consumption of electricity or natural gas based on carbon dioxide emissions to be used to reduce certain forms of pollution, in connection therewith, imposing the fee based upon the amount of carbon dioxide emissions resulting from natural gas consumption and electricity production, collecting the fee from consumers, specifying that the fee is in addition to certain existing programs, exempting revenues generated from the fee from applicable constitutional spending limits, specifying minimum percentages of the revenues that are to be spent on the following purposes, paren 1, energy efficiency, paren 2, renewable energy, paren 3, carbon sequestration, paren 4, pollution reduction, paren 5, workforce training, paren 6, technology commercialization, paren 7, public education, and paren 8, curricula development, establishing and funding a clean energy progress task force to develop strategies for a clean energy portfolio, and funding a senior advisor to the governor on climate change. Any further changes? Okay.
Not really.
Is there a motion to adopt then the staff draft as so amended with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause, except that it would begin, shall state taxes be increased $209 million, et cetera?
I would so move.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that completes action on number 83. The time is 11:14 a.m. Shall we take about a 5-minute break? Okay.